We're going to start with our colleague, Doris Chu, who is a medical officer in the Department of Reproductive Health and Research at WHO, the World Health Organization in Geneva. And we're really pleased that Doris has joined us today. As you look at her bio sketch, I'm going to ask Doris to start us off by telling us something about her that you don't know from looking at her bio sketch. So Doris, we're going to start with you. I'll ask you to if you'd like to come up here for your presentation and start by telling us something that we won't know by looking at your bio sketch. Welcome.
There are a lot of things that I could say, but maybe today I will tell you I'm actually deathly afraid of heights. And before coming here, I went up to the rooftop terrace of the hotel that I was staying in and promptly came away from the edge because it was a bit too much for me. So even though I'm working in mortality statistics all the time, I will tell you that I don't really want to be one of those anytime soon. And the other thing I will tell you is, as you can see from my bio sketch, I worked as a high-risk obstetrician all the time in my former life. And the curse of the obstetrician is that you will have almost every complication known to mankind happen to you. And also to say, nothing prepares you for your own time there. So I would have to say that the work that I do now, I'm very privileged to do something in a very different context. But it means a lot because I can remember all the moms that I had taken care of. And this really means a great deal to be able to speak to, thinkers who come from a different perspective. And I think that's why it works, is when we can collaborate and complement each other on this. So with that, I will just start because I think we want to have more time for discussion and not boring presentations. So I'm going to just speak a briefly about data and measurement for maternal mortality and try to put this into a little perspective in the global setting. So for WHO, of course, health is the center of it all, and you know that goal 3 is for good health and well-being. And the maternal health goals are, you know, one of many of the goals among indicators in goal number 3. But that doesn't mean that we lose sight of the interconnection between goal 3 and specifically goal 5. But I think as we have our discussion, we can probably touch upon a lot of the other goals as well when we speak about maternal health. Again, just to really put this into context, you know that the high-level political forum is taking place, and there was a report that was just published on global responsibilities. And one of the beautiful lines that I loved in that report was it was describing the SDG index that had been developed, which was sort of a comparison tool for how countries are doing as far as the SDGs are going. And one of the lines that they mentioned there is that countries should use this SDG index to usefully benchmark themselves against other countries and also really think about that. And that will maybe we can use that as a jumping off point for discussion. But I also want to bring your attention to the fact that, of course, the UN Secretary General gave the progress report for where we are on SDGs, and this is all freely available, and you can read that online. But what you will see if you read that report is that much of the data goes back to 2013, 2014, 2015. So where are we today in 2017? And the last is on Tuesday, there will be the launch of the progress report for the global strategy for women, children, and adolescent health. And where are we with that? And I can explain that a little bit more. There's a large monitoring framework when it comes to measurement and monitoring and where we are for maternal health. And in the global world of monitoring, the major frameworks on the left are the Ending Preventable Maternal Mortality Initiative. And on the right, you see the Every Newborn Action Plan, which looks at detailed issues related to newborn health. And you can see that both of these go into that center, which was the UN Secretary General's strategy for women, children, adolescent health. They really fed into the thinking for that. I think that was the beauty of this global strategy, which in turn informed the Sustainable Development Goals. And of course, all of those needed an indicator framework, and so there's been an indicator framework developed for the global strategy itself. And this then leads into, well, there's a huge mess of indicators. What do we do with all these? How do we make sense of who's doing all this work? And so WHO actually has convened a specialized advisory group. It's called Monitor. It's a very nice name for measuring outcomes, to look at outcomes and results. And the vision for this advisory group is that they should provide clear, independent, harmonized, and strategic advice for global and country teams engaged in maternal and newborn health measurement and accountability. And you can see that among the priorities that these 12 individuals have told WHO, the first thing is to map what is going on. I mean, there are hundreds of players in this field. So could we map the existing indicators? Could we develop a framework for how you can collect and measure these indicators? And lastly, maybe more importantly, there's a huge mess, but there are going to be gaps. So where are they? And could they make recommendations on harmonizing this? So you know that data has become, you know, really put into focus. And there's a critical role for data. It's you know, it's in every line. Improve measurement, improve monitoring, improve country level capacity and understanding of data. So you really see this evolution. It's actually reflecting an evolution that we saw starting with the MDGs. And now I think one of the big questions that we have is the country perspective on how data collected, interpreted, and for what purpose this data was being collected. I think one of the big shifts that's happened between the MDG era and the SDG era is that the SDGs are really country-led. It's about country voices, the country, the statistical offices, the technical people at country level, the program managers are really pushing the agenda. And we, as international agencies, we respond to that. We provide the unbiased information back. We're bound by our commitments to report on this. But it's really about what do countries think is important? What do they feel would be useful for them? And so just to give some more detail on the EPMM strategy report, as we like to call the Ending Preventable Maternal Mortality Initiative. It was published in 2015, and it does go through 11 key themes, which you can find if you literally Google EPMM, WHO. And these themes are split up into guiding principles, cross-cutting actions, and strategic objectives. I show you this slide just to tell you that this process started in 2013, so some years before the end of the MDGs. While we were busy still reporting on the MDGs, we also were looking forward already at what we were going to do for the post-MDG era, as we were calling it back then. And so it all started in 2013 with a very small meeting, and it grew into the EPMM initiative that was a document that was published in 2015, which was really a nice way to see that technical thinking went into how the Sustainable Development Goal for maternal mortality and would be looked at. The themes speak to empowering women and girls, ensuring country engagement and leadership. And I think one of the key things that was pulled out was improving metrics and measurement. The other things are sort of we call them strategic objectives. And I think there it's important to look at the need to strengthen the health system. So nothing is being done in a silo. And I think that was the big thing that was coming out. Sometimes it seems very obvious that you have to say these things, but you do have to put them on paper sometimes so that they're in, that people can connect the lines, basically. So EPMM then said, well, this is a lot of words, a lot of, you know, concepts. How are we going to know that people are doing anything towards ending preventable maternal mortality? And so we looked at developing what we called phase one and phase two indicators. Phase one were those that were what we considered very proximal, really very related to maternal mortality or the risk of mortality. And phase two was really about a bigger set. You know, what is it in the environment in a woman's life situation that might put her at more or less risk for an adverse outcome during her pregnancy? And here, the only thing I'd like to show you is that, again, we really need to remember that although I've been highlighting maternal health here, remember that a lot of maternal health is tied to how her newborn does. And that's part of the Every Newborn Action Plan. So although I am going to speak mainly on maternal, remember the mom and the baby are a dyad. They're inseparable. Baby certainly needs mom. And mom really needs baby to be healthy for it to be a good outcome for everybody. And so what I've done here is just to show you that ENAP came up with a set of core indicators as well. And what you see is that there's a lot of cross similarity. And that's how it should be. The difference between ENAP and EPMM is phase two, which went further and looked at the social dynamics, social determinants. And what you see is, so EPMM phase two has 25 indicators with six stratifiers that are meant to speak to equality and equity. And from the 11 themes that I showed you earlier, they get broken out into different areas. So health system strengthening, they speak to human rights issues, they speak to universal health coverage, they speak to empowering women and girls, and they speak to improving measurement and metrics. So again, I think the big issue is that you can't look at it in a silo. It goes across. So EPMM and ENAP are intimately linked. But the work on quality of care and how we are going to measure this is another big process of thought that needs to be undertaken. And then we have on the sides other sort of thought processes that have been happening. So, of course, the maternal Lancet Health series that was published, which many of us contributed to. And it was a nice way to collaborate and cross-fertilize our thoughts already. But even initiatives and partners that we work with, like Countdown to 2030, we worked very closely with them when it was Countdown to 2015. But, you know, there are a subset of countries that need special focus for lots of different reasons. And here, for Countdown to 2030, it's on maternal health that we're working on. But there are going to be other areas that we need to focus on. Now, I think one of the things that, as we moved from MDGs to SDGs, was people kept saying, well, there's unfinished business in the MDGs. But sometimes you felt like there was so much newness that people wanted to focus on the new things. But we have to remember there are holdovers from the past that maybe were not always perfectly done before. So we really need to do the difficult work of really learning from our lessons. And some of learning from our lessons is to refine some of the work that had been done in the past. So WHO, with our sister agencies and other professional associations, have been really looking at what do we mean by maternal death? I mean, there is a definition, but the interpretation of that definition we found in the MDG monitoring era varied widely, and it was amazing. Some of this literally got chalked up to translation between English and French, or English and Spanish. I mean, it was amazing. It would take 3 years to figure out that it was because in Spanish, revision meant something intrinsically different. It didn't mean that they'd made a change. It meant that they reviewed it. 3 years of political discussion on one word. So when you think about how we have to move things ever so slowly, it really is about taking the, we have to keep, take stock of the old while we're moving forward and trying to look really far in the future so that we can really always make sure that things are harmonized. You know, you can't say something with your left hand and make it not work with your right hand. And that's something that's been taking a lot of time to do. And I think that's the other thing is people are pressured to get things done. And trying to really put the brakes on and say, can we just think about this a second? And can we make sure that everybody who needs to be at the table is at the table to think this through? Because, for instance, when we talk about quality of care, when we talk about measuring essential adolescent services, what is essential? Essential to you and me might be very different than essential to the adolescent that we're trying to reach. And how do we get the right set of adolescents to help inform us on what we should be monitoring? So I think, you know, there's a lot of potential for thought and thinking, and there's a great space. You know, we're really in a fantastic time that we can really think about this and make a change. And I think another thing that there's been a lot of attention placed on special populations and situations like humanitarian and, you know, conflict zones and how we're going to measure there. And of course, when you've got an immediate conflict or an immediate emergency in front of you, the last thing you're thinking about is counting. But it's so critical. So why or how can we make sure that some counting gets done? And how can we make sure that we understand how that counting was done? These are really difficult questions when you're literally searching for, I've got X amount of money in this pot. How am I going to split it up and make it work for everybody. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of work still to be done. We've accomplished a great deal, but there's certainly space for more work, more collaboration, and more thinking together. So really, I will stop here and just say everyone, everywhere, has something to do, be it a healthcare professional, be it somebody who's working in an NGO or a CSO, you know, individuals from number one to groups to agencies, we all have something to do. Every country has something to do. There's no perfect country. If you look at that SDG index, you know, the best performing country still has issues. They're not green light across on every goal. And even countries that have very high functioning systems, we've always found that there have been some limitations. And I think the openness of countries and individuals to now understand that, you know, when things are identified, it's not a criticism, it's a how can we make it better so that it works better and that we can understand better. So I think really meaningful improvement on measurement needs investment and strategic implementation. We have to understand why we're doing it, and all 100 of us cannot be standing on the same spot. We need to be able to share this space so that we can work together productively. So I'm going to stop here, maybe I think Rachel will be able to give us some more information. So I'm very happy to hear.
Thank you very much, Doris. So before we move on to Rachel, there were a few things that you teed up that I want to ask you to deconstruct a little more. And you put it in there, and there was definitely a teaser. So I'm going to take the bait. So you talk about the SDG index being important to usefully benchmark. So deconstruct that for us a little bit. What does it mean to usefully benchmark? What does that mean?
Well, I think it could be interpreted in many ways, but I think the first thing is that as countries look at whatever the SDG index is or however things are being monitored, there are always lists that are going to be created. And even if individuals who've created estimates, for instance, don't necessarily want lists to be made like that, they will be naturally made. So the point isn't that for a country should say, I want my number to be better than that country. It's not that. It's saying, why is my number that? And what is it that they might be doing better or we might be doing better that shows a difference? So I think the issue is we have to be completely eyes open to the fact that, yes, these numbers are very political. But I really think that so I'm a technical person, and I think that if you go armed with the right technical details, and you know the details, and you know the data, you can explain why it's so important to bring it down off that political. You know, and that's what it is. You need to spend the time to make it real, to say, okay, let's get into a safe space to discuss what the issue is. Yes, the media are going to be here. We need to think about why the media are bothering X country about this number. You know, is there an issue or not? My job is to make sure that things don't get misinterpreted. And that, I think, is the issue, is making sure that interpretation is done in the context that it was intended for. And that's a responsibility that I think we have to be very careful with, making sure that we are, you know, able to make sure that it's used in an appropriate way and the limitations are clearly stated.
Okay. So I wanted to follow up on that, and I heard you use a term which I suspect is very carefully selected, but is probably a term that you use very, very often, which was, you said, as an international agency, we provide unbiased data. So when you talk about the political context of data and benchmarking, is this the same thing? Is this what you mean by unbiased data? Is there a different permeation there?
Well, I think in the context of maternal mortality, for instance, I work on the global estimates. And that means taking a lot of apples, oranges, and pears and putting them together to mean something and having them be comparable. But there are a lot of nuances with those apples and oranges, and there are how many kinds of apples? There's tons, right? So you really need to make sure that you've considered what was the original data, and why is it imperfect, or why is it perfect? And there are, you know, countries sometimes have gone through extraordinary measures to check everything that they're reporting. We need to celebrate that. We need to show those as good examples. They're really hard to find because, not because they weren't being done, but because sometimes the individuals who are collecting that data and checking that data and doing all that work took it as a matter of fact. Of course we do this. It makes sense to do this. Well, yes, but we actually have to document these processes. And I think in the time that I've been working on maternal mortality estimates over the past 10 years, what you saw was really an openness, an increasing openness to share documentation on the really nitty-gritty details of what they were doing. So just to come back to your initial question, I think the issue of comparability is a big thing to discuss. And we need to be sure that when we're looking at a set of numbers, we understand what those set of numbers mean. That's the crux of it. The devil's always in the details. We also know that nobody reads the fine print. So how do we present things in a responsible way?
Yeah, great. So one final quick question. You make the case that we've gone from the MDGs to the SDGs, and really what is so different about that process is that it's country-led. Mm-hmm. Are you hearing any feedback criticizing that process? That, you know, is everyone on board with this country-led approach? Where are we struggling? You know, so we've moved to the MDGs, to the SDGs, recognizing the value and importance of having this country-led process. Is that creating other problems that we didn't anticipate? Who are the detractors? What are people saying about that country-led process? Is everyone agreeing, kumbaya, this is great, yes, let's move forward, or... How are we managing that space? And it's an honest question.
No, and I think the reality is, any change makes people unsettled. And I think when there was that initial switch, you know, for the agencies, we sat there and said, well, we used to sit at this table, and now we're here. Right. What does that mean? But we also understood that maybe the priorities of countries were not always put in the front and center. And so it's about how do you balance that? And I think we're in a space and time of balancing the needs of really both mandates. Countries have a sovereign right and need to understand what's going on in their country and to understand the data that are being reported on them. As international agencies, when we're working on unbiased, so really not influenced by political, I want it to be this, there is a balance and there has to be a discussion. We have to come to a common understanding. And I think that's really the long and important work that takes time and takes people to do.
Great. Thank you. That was great. Wonderful.